Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, good evening. So we're in the middle of Dush. So we were doing learning Dush last week. So I have sometimes been remiss in asking for questions. So I want to make sure we stop for a moment and see if there are any pending questions that need to be addressed in last week's class or any classes, any Hilchos Shabbos questions. No. Okay. That's always the way it is, right? And Shabbos, you can't write it down. That's the worst part.
That's
the worst part. Okay. Okay, so we're in the middle of Dush. Dush, just to recap a little bit, is the process of separating, extracting a fruit or a veggie from its inedible shell, but as part of the harvesting process. That was the definition that we gave. I just brought the picture book here just to remind everyone of its existence. So his definition is separating a natural product from its natural container. Okay, he's a little more broad than what we gave. But again, highly recommend this work. It really does, after you hear a class for a while and you see, that is on page 24, top of page 24. That really does concretize the concepts. As they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. So we mentioned, just to recap, that the Malach of Dush itself, the Av, is not super duper relevant. We're going to touch on an example or two, an application or two. But in our world, certainly as non-farmers, it's not super duper relevant. But we're going to see, we discussed Schita as one of the Todos, one of the offshoots, one of the children, so to speak, of Dush, is quite relevant. And we're going to see there's an Issa D'Rabbanan coming up that also is quite relevant. So correct me if I'm wrong, but we're two-thirds of the way down that page. We talked about wiping up spills, mm-hmm. The kind of last point we made.
We didn't talk about sponges or paper towels or napkins.
Okay. All right. Yes, so let's touch on those. Thank you. So sponges, paper towels, napkins, those types of things, ladies, are really shouldn't be on the sheet per se. We mentioned that the issur of schita, of squeezing, appears under two different categories. It appears under dush number 5, and also appears under malabe number 12, which we certainly have not gotten to yet. We said the distinction between the two is dush is schita over here, and dush. Like the av itself, the goal is the salad. The goal is the product. The goal is the thing that comes out. So that squeezing lemons, the goal is the lemon juice. The goal very much is the liquid. Whereas the schita under malabin being bleaching and laundering, the goal there is to dry the solid. So under schita at least, the goal here is the liquid. The goal is the liquid, whereas the goal later on we're going to see of the schita there, and again, it's the same word. The same word schita appears in both places. So sometimes in post-kim, in Svarim, it gets very confusing. Which schita are we talking about? So I just want to be clear. Here we're talking really about the schita of dush, so the goal is the product. So in this case, the liquid that comes out. So in a certain sense, I am contributing to the confusion by throwing sponges and towels and all that in here. I don't recall when I originally took these shurim from the Sefer Rabbi Ribiat Sefer, why he threw it in there. I don't recall, and why I left it in. But they are prohibited. It's prohibited to use a sponge on Shabbos, generally speaking. It's prohibited to use certainly a wet paper towel on Shabbos, but that would actually be the schita of It really depends. It kind of straddles the fence. Let me try and explain. When you're trying to wipe up something, a counter, we talked last week about how you really should put the liquid on the surface. That's really the way to clean it up, because then we view it, and then you take a shmata, you take a napkin or towel, whatever it is, and you wipe up the liquid from the surface. So there we look at it as if you're absorbing the liquid from the surface, not the opposite. If you take a wet sponge and that would be okay. Whereas if you take a wet sponge, you are now extracting. You're now taking the liquid from the sponge onto the surface. So, if you are using a cloth, okay, this answers my question from before. If you're using a cloth and the goal is to clean the surface, that would be a problem of shechita, and it is our shechita. I really just confused you.
I have no idea what you're even talking about.
Okay, yeah, this definitely fits in the context of last week. If you weren't here last week, it's going to be a little bit harder. But
I was sick.
The right.
I know you appreciated my not being here.
We missed you. So let me try and clarify again. If you're using a cloth and your goal is to clean a surface, so that and the cloth is wet. So therefore, your goal is that the liquid should come out of the cloth and wipe the surface. That is prohibited on Shabbos, and that would be our shechita. If you are using a cloth and you're wringing out the cloth, and your goal is to dry the cloth, that's also prohibited. That would be the shechita of malabing, which is number 12.
So in any case,
in either case, it's prohibited. Yes.
But you can just spray something on your counter.
Yes. So the most important thing is to know what to do, which is, yes, to spritz the counter, pour water on, or spray, or whatever. Water, fantastic, whatever it is, and then wipe it off with a towel, that would be perfectly fine. That would be perfectly fine. Because again, we look at that as absorbing the liquid, which it is, as opposed to coming at the counter with a wet cloth, which is extracting liquid from the cloth, which is prohibited.
Could you use a sponge to absorb?
Good question. So generally the answer is no, because a sponge is, this is again one of the reasons why we went muksa before, a sponge is considered a shechita machine. It's muksa because normally it's used wet to extract, although we do use sponges to dry things up, you wipe up a spill. The other concern with the sponge is it so naturally gives, you know, it just naturally lets go of what it's got. That's why it's a sponge. It's bouncy, it's got air bubbles, you know, all that. So generally we would avoid using a sponge even in that way, even to soak up. But certainly a cloth would be permissible, paper towel that was pre-cut, napkins.
What about some of the, you know, harder things like the steel, or, you know, not steel necessarily, but like, you know, is there something like the targe that's stuck on the counters or the tables?
Like a scrubber, you know, a scrubber thing.
Yeah. Yes, okay. That's a very good question. So that's actually one of the next points is, and I think we touched on this last week, is brushes. And that is, we said that if a brush, like a nylon brush is tightly packed, like a toothbrush, mm-hmm. then many posts say one should not use that wet either, because even though the nylon itself doesn't absorb per se, but there's water trapped between the bristles, and that's like shechita. That's like you're letting go of the liquid inside. But on the other hand, if it is a wide brushed bristle, the bristles are widely separated, more widely separated, so the water, you know, the bristles are wet, but they're not really absorb, they're not really holding the liquid, and sometimes the line, of course, between what's considered tight and what's considered loose is not 100% clear. But if it's more loose, which those Shabbos, you know, if you buy one of those things from a kosher, you know, whatever magazine, that would be certainly considered loose, that's fine.
IKEA has them too.
Yeah, yeah, we don't have them. We certainly don't have the, most, you know, we stole our ideas from other places mostly.
IKEA has the real white.
They don't look very different than the other ones to me.
Right.
Let's compare now that you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
If you've used one of the other ones, yeah. You would know the difference.
Yeah. Right, the colors.
And,
yeah.
Yeah,
they look the same. They do.
You know, we put mostly fleshy carve on them or whatever, but
colors have blue, red, and green.
There you go.
Oh, I thought you meant the toothbrush then.
No.
Oh, I'm talking about the toothbrushes.
The cleaning brushes. So wiping up spills, I want to make sure we don't miss that point. I think we did make this point last week, but just to revisit, wiping up spills, one has to be careful that the thing that you use to wipe up the spill is big enough to do the job. If you've got a big spill, you need a big towel. Because we don't want a big spill overwhelming a little napkin or whatever, and then you pick up the napkin, and almost by definition, you're now squeezing the liquid out of that napkin. So it is true, you're certainly allowed to, this is one of those, I think, big topics that everyone, you know, wonders. You're certainly allowed on a counter, on a floor, whatever, to throw paper towel, napkin, real towel, whatever it is on it to absorb it. But you should be careful both in cleaning, you know, and it's best really just to throw it on, let it do a thing, and then just take it and throw it. Either throw it in the laundry, throw it in the garbage. But again, the substance that you use, whatever you choose to use, should be big enough to do the job. You shouldn't overwhelm it, and then you end up with the shechita almost by definition, like the psik resha almost. You know, it's about the, you know, there's ways around that too. But certainly in a perfect world, one should use something that's big, you know, instead of one napkin, three napkins, that kind of thing. Yes, ma'am.
So using towels and napkins would be the same as using a cloth?
Yeah.
In the same,
yep.
Okay.
Exactly. Right. And there's a different conversation, but of course, paper towels would have to be pre-cut.
Well, but I use the ones that come individual.
Oh, perfect. So. Yeah. Hello. Welcome, welcome. So, so that is that topic. Now, along the same lines as the brush we just talked about, is steel wool and those plastic mesh type of things. So the post can basically say the same thing. Those anything like that should not be used if it's tightly packed enough to hold water. Meaning, if you stick in the water and then take it out and squeeze it. So the steel wool itself obviously is not absorbing water like a sponge absorbs water, but there's enough trapped in there that we avoid that. Whereas certainly if it's dry, okay, it's okay. And even if it's wet, if it's you know, like one of those plastic balls, whatever they call those things, that are relatively, you know, there's a lot of space.
Yeah,
exactly. They don't really, they're wet, but they're not holding. You squeeze it, not a whole lot's going to come out. Whereas a fine steel wool, we all know, if you squeeze it, that's almost like a sponge. So that's a distinction we make there as well. Facial tissue with aloe and oils. This is, I think, an interesting shaila. It's a modern day, very modern day, you know, issue. Puffs or Kleenex or whoever, X number a few years ago came out with aloe. You know, the lotion gets on your hands. I don't see it around as often as much as I used to. But anyway, that's mutter. That's not a problem. Even though your goal there is to have the lotion on your hands, the post can come out and say that that's not that's a non-issue. To use that kind of tissue. Just to be clear, though, to use most hand lotions on Shabbos is a problem. I think we touched on this last week, and we said you have to dilute it before Shabbos, or use some kind of liquid. Use anything which runs smoothly, canola oil, anything like that type of consistency, that kind of viscosity is fine. But a lot of the body lotions and hand lotions and all that are much thicker. So those either have to be diluted or avoided. On Shabbos, a lot of hand sanitizers cannot be used on Shabbos. Again, it's not our topic per se, but certainly relates. Okay, now a big topic, much more relevant today in Eretz Yisrael, is milking a cow, and this is discussed widely in the poskim until recently. This was across the Jewish world was an issue. Again, today in certain parts of Israel, Moshavim and the Kibbutzim, and I forget the big milk company's name. Right now, but they all have to deal with this issue. A Jewish-owned company, Jewish farmer with cows. What do you do? So, on one hand, of course, that would be dush. Chazal understand that milking a cow on Shabbos is dush, is extracting a liquid, so to speak, from the cow. Sounds funny, but that's legally speaking, it would be prohibited because of dush. On the other hand, we have a very important rule that runs throughout halacha, which is tzar bali chayim, which is pain to an animal. We're obligated to avoid paining an animal. This gets into a whole broader topic of the Jewish view of animals and all that kind of stuff. But certainly, the short answer to what's our view of animals is Hashem allows us to use them but not abuse them. That is the short, standing on one foot Jewish approach to animals. And no, despite the fact that veterinarian down the street says this, pets are not people too. We totally disavow that idea. But certainly we also, on the other side, it's forbidden to eat before you feed your animal. There's a lot of rules and regs about how Jews are supposed to take care of their animals. So here also, you can't let a cow that's nursing go a whole day without being milked. So the solution to this, there's several solutions, but the basic solution is to allow the cow to be milked, but that the milk should be ruined immediately, which means in the bucket, without getting into the technology and how it's done today, which I'm not certainly qualified to address properly. But classic case is you milk Bessie into a bucket. So in that bucket would be Clorox, or in that bucket would be some other chemical which would instantly destroy that milk. Then already you're getting into, it's the same act, but if you remember back to introductory concepts, that is the only time an act on Shabbos is prohibited is if it's Meleches Machshavos, which means the same goal and same intent as was done in the Mishkan. And one of those rules is always that it is Mesaken, it's always constructive. Whereas if something is destructive, if the act that you do is destructive, that's not prohibited biblically. Generally, it's prohibited rabbinically, but it's not going to be prohibited biblically. So in this case, where the act of milking the cow into Clorox is considered a destructive act, you're not benefiting from it in any way, the only remaining prohibition potentially would be rabbinic, and the rabbis did not forbid that for that very reason, because we can't allow the cow to go without being milked. So that is the classic solution. Everyone, especially, you know, I think Americans, recycle conscious Americans and environmentally friendly conscious Americans say, how can you do that? You're wasting good milk. The answer is, yeah. Despite the fact that halacha is very particular about not wasting and not abusing the sol bal tashlis, wasting things that God gives us. Famous story of Yaakov and the angels, because he went back to get things he forgot. You know, we don't let things go. We don't, you know, if God gave me this, that means I'm supposed to have it for a reason. Despite that, the laws of Shabbos trump. The laws of Shabbos trump, and this is a good example where that milk does go to waste if there's no other. There might be other solutions, like partnership with a non-Jew. There might be other ways. I'm pretty sure that's the.
Can you give this to the animals?
The milk? No. Well, certainly, yes. Certainly, if the cow, you know, calf is milking from his mother, that's totally nothing to do with, you know, that's totally fine. But if a person, a Jew, is involved with milking the cow, yes, and then you get into the issues of you know, hiring a non-Jew, and Israel would be Arabs to milk the cow, and who owns the cow, you know, then you get into more complicated issues. You have Jewish companies. Remember, there's a glass company in Baltimore. I forget the name, Kaplan Glass, I think it was. And they somehow worked out a partnership with a non, I don't know if the company was a partnership and half owned by non-Jews, because on Shabbos, you saw the truck, on Shabbos they covered the name Kaplan, whatever the Jewish, clearly Jewish name was. And somehow they worked out that was, you know, so there are ways around that. It's complicated, it's not so simple. You know, I think we often think, yeah, you know, why can't the Jew own the bakery and just, you know, on Shabbos it'll be, it's not so simple. But there are, there sometimes are ways around that, certainly. Okay, any questions on that?
Can I have one of the sheets because I don't have one?
I think we ran out. I need to make. Yeah, I did not give out any new sheets today. So if you were here last week, and you were.
This is yours.
That is.
Pounding the floor.
Oh. Is that yours?
No.
Okay. There you go. Okay. So yeah, there's no new sheets today.
Okay.
We still have two or three sheets to go. Okay. Nursing a baby goes without saying that a baby can and should nurse from its mother. No question, no issue, no nothing. That's not a malacha. That's a baby eating, and all eating we've discussed is not relevant to a malacha at all, ever. The only issue is pumping. If a woman needs to pump, then what's the situation there? So clearly an electrical pump, which Americans, I suspect, are very used to, that would be out, no question about that. If a woman needs to express milk, she should use a mechanical pump, a hand pump. And there again, it should be leibud. It should be wasted, meaning there should be something put in the bottom of the bottle and then thrown out, that the act of pumping is not constructive, it's destructive. Now, clearly, ladies, we're not talking about a baby who, God forbid, is, you know, if they don't get that milk, they're going to be sick in a serious way. We're not talking about that. But in a normal situation, the mother is sometimes nursing, sometimes pumping, freezes when they were at work. You know, that type of a situation, one cannot pump on Shabbos and use that milk. It has to be an act of, again, an act of kilkul, an act of destroying, not a non-creative act on Shabbos, as opposed to creative and using it. So that's the way around that. Okay, now I know that's the end of that section, but there's two important points which we need to add, which I guess there's only really, let me look at this one second here. Yeah, certainly one important point, I think again we touched on this last week, is toothbrushes. And you can write this in wherever it fits or on the back. Can one use a toothbrush on Shabbos? So let me preface by saying toothpaste, our regular toothpaste, Crest, Aim, Aquafresh, whatever, the regular toothpaste that comes in a tube is prohibited to be used on Shabbos. And it has nothing to do with dash or srita. It has to do with other malachas we'll get to and we'll discuss more in detail when we get there. But suffice it to say, it's the same as using bar soap. It's the same as using stick deodorant. It's the same as using any solid that then is smeared off and made into a different form. That is prohibited on Shabbos. So using solids, regular solid toothpaste is out. Then there is the, if you've been to Israel, you've seen the famous, I don't know, somehow you can't go without seeing it. The famous, I assume they still do it, it's been a long time since I've seen it. They do? The toothpaste that comes in a triangular tube, triangular, whatever you call that container, probably very similar to mouthwash. So using that, using a liquid certainly is, there are ways of doing that. I mean, using mouthwash for sure is permissible on Shabbos. Thank, you know, thank God. Yep. We're spoiled Americans and, you know, we don't like, going without something. So certainly mouthwash is no problem at all. The question is toothbrushes. So the Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous response about using toothbrushes, and he says that one can use a toothbrush, a regular toothbrush, Kroger, you know, whatever, toothbrush, but it should be used dry. It should go in your mouth dry because of the reason we said earlier, that the bristles there are pretty tight. And if one wets it like they normally do, that water is being extracted in your mouth. And that's a form or akin to this issue of schita. Does everyone hold of that? Clearly not. I mean, if you're using the liquid toothpaste, it comes in the triangles, and you're squirting on your toothbrush, you're clearly not. So there are a couple approaches, different approaches. Some will allow wetting the toothbrush and say, don't worry about it. Some are Moshe Feinstein among them, who's usually very lenient, actually. Says you should use a toothbrush dry. But again, there's no one in the world that would say yes, you can use the solid toothpaste. That's totally out. The other caveat that Rav Moshe writes is that you should have a Shabbos only toothbrush, because again, this goes back to the laws of Moksa, where a toothbrush 6 days out of the week is used with toothpaste. Well, if it's used with toothpaste, it becomes Moksa category. Well, toothpaste, yeah, I'm kind of skirting the issue. I'm not getting fully into it. It's a different malacha of taking a solid and making it into a liquid in this case. That's a different malacha. I don't want to get too far into. But this would be the toothbrush, because it's used normally with toothpaste, and the toothpaste is definitely prohibited, would be category... would be, well, there's some dush issues here, but the muksa aspect would be category B, exactly. It's partially muksa because it's a vessel, it's designed to do something, but the thing it's designed to do is prohibited. The thing is normally used is applying, well, you're applying the tooth, on, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you're applying the toothpaste to your teeth and making it into a liquid. That's prohibited. So Rav Moshe writes, you should have a Shabbos specific toothbrush, and then according to some people, you could use liquid on it. According to Rav Moshe, you have to use it dry. But either way, that toothbrush then would only be used without toothpaste, and is no longer muksa. So you would maintain again. This is another reason why we learned, you know, one of the many examples of why we learned muksa first.
You know, the one-time use. You know,
I've heard of them. Never used them.
Disposable.
Yeah, they're
and they're pre.
Maybe you had like some dust or something inside.
On like the toothpaste is already on it.
But it's like a traveling
whisk or something.
It's clean ups, yeah. Or uh-huh. Brush ups is one. You mean they're little?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't say I've ever had the pleasure, but certainly if it's a solid becoming a liquid, that's a problem.
They're dry.
That's a problem. But yeah, if it's dry.
They're dry. You just
and then you use
the
it.
Yeah.
But then it becomes like a foam, like regular?
No, I don't think it foams up, because I've seen them before.
I've got them, but I don't think I use them.
I have one too, and I don't think it foams up or anything.
Does it?
A little, I've never used
it. Okay, so I have to take a, closer look at that.
If you designate a toothbrush for Shabbos, and you use that liquid from
then
Israel.
Many would say that's okay.
Yep. They make a mouthwash toothpaste now that's like really liquidy.
Okay. That'd be the same thing.
It's like a combination. It's not like the thick. Mm-hmm. If it's liquidy enough.
As long as it pours, easily. It pours easily, you're good.
You can use that liquid from Israel on a regular toothbrush.
No, the regular toothbrush would be muksa, so you should have a Shabbos specific toothbrush. With the, you can either with the liquid or dry.
Liquid.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that
it's just as good as mouthwash.
Yeah.
I mean, that was good as awful.
Regular toothbrush on Shabbos, you only have a Shabbos one, because also a regular one can cause your gums to bleed.
Oh, yes, I was just going to mention that issue. Thank you. The post can do right that if your gums do normally bleed, if you normally bleed when you brush your teeth, that's a problem. That's a separate, again, a totally different malacha of shechita, which is 26. That's a separate problem that should be avoided. Yes. So either, if brushing them gently won't cause you to bleed, that's okay. But that's definitely something to be avoided. So flossing, cutting the floss for sure would be out. If you have one of those sticks with a pre-cut, that would be okay, as long provided that there's no bleeding. Certainly, if your gums bleed, that would be out. But using a pick or whatever like that would be. So you can floss again. You can't rip the floss. You can't tear the floss. So it'd have to be pre-cut. One of those sticks or something like that. And you have to make sure your gums are not going to bleed from it.
Yeah.
So. For some people, that just means, how good a job are you doing? Yes, yeah. But again, you can't rip it off the roll.
What about bubble gum?
What about bubble gum?
Can you chew bubble gum?
Sure. Yep. Yep.
Keep you clean your teeth.
No problem. Not a problem. I mean, a lot of foods do clean your teeth. Not a problem. Now, the other thing that's come out more recently is Shabbos toothbrushes. I think someone brought one in. You did? Okay. So the plastic-headed Shabbos toothbrush.
The rubber.
Rubber-headed Shabbos toothbrush from Kosher Innovations or whoever. Those are certainly fine. Yeah, some people just don't,
I made myself start using it. I've had it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And
then,
use it.
One of the simplest solutions is Scope or Listerine or whatever you it just avoids the whole question.
That's the influence of this class, though, Rabbi.
What's that?
That I made myself start using it because, I knew it before, but the class made me do it.
Putting it in your right in your face.
You brought it. I knew, but I had it.
Okay. Okay, that's a point we can save for later. Okay, any questions about Dosh, ladies? Before we move on. I hope I didn't confuse in some areas more than I clarified. Okay, at the very bottom of this page is Risuk. Risuk, ladies, you see that Hebrew word at the bottom. Risuk is a rabbinic prohibition. It's a rabbinic prohibition, which means it's a rabbinic invention. This is an example of a shvus, a siyog, a geder, all the words that we used before. They're all referring to the same thing, which is a rabbinic rule that prohibits us from doing something on Shabbos. A translation would be crushing things on Shabbos, and more specifically the definition would be breaking down solids or semi-solids into a liquid. Breaking down solids or semi-solids into a liquid. So again, one more time, the definition would be breaking down solids or semi-solids into a liquid, and I'm just looking as I'm talking up into the picture book, and he very diplomatically avoids this whole issue of Risuk. Understandably so, it's going to be hard to explain in picture how this has anything to do with Dosh. But, he definitely talks about Sita, that's the main focus here. His picture of a kid milking a cow. Okay, and again, it's a really, really good book. Next page, ladies. So there's two reasons, top of the next page. It's again, Malacha Hay, and it says reasons is the first item. So two reasons are given for this rabbinic rule. Two reasons. One is, and this is why it's here, is reason A is it's similar to Tzchita. It's similar to Tzchita. Again, Tzchita was squeezing a solid to get out a liquid. So here, you are crushing or mashing or pounding or whatever on a solid and it yields a liquid. Got right sheets?
I've got four sheets, so I'm...
That one right there. So that's reason A. Reason A is because it's similar to Tzchita. So Tzchita is a biblical prohibition. This would be a rabbinic prohibition, prohibiting something which is similar, in the eyes of Chazal, is similar to Tzchita. And reason B of this is it's a form of, the word is nolad. In English it's spelled N-O-L-A-D. N-O-L-A-D. Nolad. Nolad, really the same word as yeled or yalda, means a product, a creation, something new. So that there's a lot of areas. Nolad. N-O-L-A-D. The form, reason B says this is a form of nolad, you're creating something new on Shabbos, which, let's face it, you know, all 39 malachos revolve in some way around this idea of not creating, not being creative. So this is a rabbinic rule that says you're now creating something new and therefore needs to be avoided. And again, as we give some examples, I think this will become much more clear. So again, reason A is it's similar to Tzchita, going from a solid to a liquid. And reason B, just to recap, is it's a form of nolad, which is creating a new thing, a new entity. Okay, so the next section, halachos for each reason. Frozen orange juice. Give me 1 second here. Deciphering my own notes, which went through several changes. So the halachos for reason A, let's leave orange juice out of this for a second. But reason A, ladies, the focus here is it's prohibited to do something, to do an action which creates a liquid. Reason A, that's similar to Tzchita, is saying don't do something on Shabbos that will create a liquid. So just like Tzchita, you're squeezing the lemon and you're getting lemon juice, here you're mashing something, a solid or a semi-solid, you're creating a liquid out of it, like frozen orange juice to orange juice, liquid, puree, whatever you want to call that stuff. It's the act that we're focusing on. And reason B is really not focusing on the act, it's focusing on the change. It's focusing on the fact that now you've got something new. You've got a different entity than you started with. So the halachos under reason B, and we're going to see, we consider both reasons in practical halacha, but for reason B, ladies, we're not so worried about whether you're doing something, we're worried about are you allowing something to happen on its own, so to speak, on Shabbos. We're not talking about setting it up before, but you're setting it up on Shabbos to change on Shabbos. That would be prohibited under the rationale, under the viewpoint, so to speak, of reason B.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Could you let that frozen orange juice thaw completely and then...
Okay, so let me jump in with that very example. So... You know, we did mention frozen orange juice here, so let's go with that. So the halachos for each reason for frozen orange juice, again, we just said reason A is focused on the action. So taking a spoon, a fork, something like that, and crushing the frozen orange juice and making it into a liquid would be prohibited under reason A. Reason B, on the other hand, says we're not focused on the action, we're focused on the change, and therefore leaving it in an unusually warm place would be prohibited. So for taking that frozen orange juice in the summer and putting it on your porch, where it's 95 degrees in August in Atlanta, that would be prohibited. Even though you're not acting on it per se, you're not taking a fork or a spoon and start crushing it down, but you're leaving it somewhere which is warmer than normal and creating that change on purpose, that would be prohibited under the second reason. The good news is that leaving it, taking it out of the freezer, let's say, you know, 11 o'clock, Shabbos morning, you want to make orange juice, and just leaving it on the counter to thaw is perfectly fine. That's not considered, there's a fine line here, that's not considered enough of a change, meaning yes, it's changing, and the result is the same. If you leave it there long enough, at 70 degrees, it will thaw. There's no question. It came from your freezer to the room temperature. But there we don't, you're not acting on it, so reason A doesn't apply. And reason B, again, this is where there's a thin line here, you're not doing a strange enough, you're not putting it in a place which is strange enough, hot enough, to be considered a problem. You're just putting it where, you know, where it belongs, so to speak. And then letting it thaw on its own. We look at it as more as a passive, your involvement is more passive, whereas putting it on a 95 degree porch is more active.
You can't hasten the thawing, is really what
right.
you're saying.
Right.
You have all intentions of using it on Shabbos, not after Shabbos.
Right. Certainly. Yeah, so if your intentions are to use it after Shabbos, it's prohibited for other reasons.
Right.
Correct. But if your goal is to use it for Shabbos lunch, so you take it out an hour or two before and just leave it on the counter, that's fine.
Okay.
That's actually totally fine. So, again, we all appreciate, I think, reason B, we are splitting hairs here to a certain extent. What's the difference between here and there? And the halacha does make that distinction. A really unusually warm place is prohibited. A regular room temperature place is not.
Well, also theoretically, if you're putting it in that warm room place, you're going to have to cool it again, too, before you're not going to...
That's true, too.
So you're also changing it more.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's go through some of these applications now that we know, again, Risuk, the rabbinic prohibition, the two reasons and two applications within orange juice. So let's go through some of these. So crushing ice in a drink for water. So in other words, if you had a cup of ice, it's very unclear how I wrote that, but crushing ice to get water, like you want to make water, that would be prohibited. Reason A says you can't crush something and make it into, with the goal of making it into that liquid. That's prohibited under reason A. So crushing ice, for water, you can put a line through in water, in drink, I don't know how clear that is, that would be prohibited. On the other hand, leaving, this is not, I don't think there's a specific line for this, but you can just include this, putting ice in a drink is perfectly fine. Putting ice in a drink, you're not actively taking something and trying to crush it down. You're just leaving it in the room temperature Coke or the room temperature whatever. That's fine. That's melting on its own. It's changing, certainly eventually it'll disappear. It's changing form, but it's the same as leaving the orange juice on the counter. It's a normal, weird way of melting it. It's a passive way of melting it, and that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine. The only prohibition there would be actively crushing it into... So for example, if you got half a cup of water and half a cup of ice, and you leave it there for 20 minutes, and now you've got cold water, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But to start with ice and to put it somewhere hot or to crush it certainly would be prohibited. Yes, ma'am.
Can you fill your ice?
Ice tray? Yes, that is coming.
Wait, no.
Yeah, that's the hottest. Pardon the pun. That's the hottest question of this whole thing. And tea, hot tea, I assume. Like you want to make iced tea. So that's...
No.
Just cool it down. Yes, as long as... We'll get to the details of that, but certainly if it's in klishlishi, there's no problem at all. Just as a general policy, we're not going to get there for a few weeks or whatever it will be. It's certainly best when you take water from your urn on Shabbos we just make it a home policy. You take it from the urn to a cup, and from one cup to another cup, and then you never have to worry.
Someone made that suggestion to me, which I thought was brilliant and so simple. Just put it like in a get one of the little tea containers. Tea pots.
There you go.
Put it on the table, because it's awkward sometimes. Some people don't do it.
Right.
And so.
So that is your shame. Right. That's perfect. The urn goes to that little tea thing. Little water kettle, and then the water kettle into individual cups. That's always the problem. Absolutely. That's a great idea. It's just, when you start having sheni and shlishis coming to the table, and some are for tea and some are for not, it's very, very
right.
tricky.
And then I forget who I've given
you one. Totally forget which one's which. Just, either that suggestion or station a cup under the urn And that cup just stays there. That's Mr. Shaney. And he doesn't get used. He just stays there. That's his job. And he just constantly pours this stuff in another. Just better safe than sorry. Okay. So stirring a smoothie, no problem at all, actually, in this case. We don't view stirring in general as an act of crushing, as opposed to taking the spoon and mashing down that orange juice blob, whatever you call that, mass. That's stirring a smoothie is a non-issue. There's a bunch of reasons, but that's totally fine. That type of, I don't mean smoothie specifically, but that type of thing. Now, pouring hot water over ice is actually also, according to many poskim, is prohibited. According to many poskim, ignoring whatever cooking issues, let's assume, that's a non-issue here, but that according to many, is an act of crushing. It's similar enough to crushing. You're actively making that ice melt. That's prohibited. Whereas pouring room temperature water over ice and it does melt somewhat, that's fine. That's not considered significant, radical enough. That's more passive. Pouring cold water over orange juice would not be a problem. It's melting a little bit, but generally it's not. We don't consider that to be, again, a radical type of thing. The poskim do say the best way, the best recipe, so to speak, to make frozen orange juice, frozen grape juice, all these types of frozen beverages, is to fill the, you kind of can't do this if you follow the instructions, but to fill the pitcher with water and squeeze, and then just drop the orange juice in. Again, if you follow the instructions, you can't do that because you're supposed to fill it, you pour it out and you fill it up. But there are certainly people who will do it that way. They'll fill it with water first. How they measure it, I'm not quite sure. And then they will throw the orange juice in. But it's fine to do it the regular way. You can put the orange juice in and then just pour regular, as long as it's not hot, which most of us aren't going to do anyway, speaking to your point before. You want cold orange juice. You don't want... So that's generally not... Either way you do it, it's generally fine. Okay, cracking an ice tray. We still remember ice trays before ice makers. That's perfectly fine. That's a non-issue. Breaking it back and forth and tossing the ice out. Non-issue. Totally non-issue. To stir a drink with ice, we said before, smoothies is really the same thing. It's not, even though your goal is the ice should melt and cool off the drink, not considered an active act of melting ice. Okay, frozen OJ on kitchen counter, we said already, we touched on this already, is totally fine. Now, there is a custom that you'll see some people when they put ice out on the table on Shabbos, they'll put water in the bowl, in the ice tray, whatever it is, first, in the ice bucket. Put some water in first. And the reason for that is when the ice does melt, they want the ice melting into water, which is already there, as opposed to now you've got a bowl of fresh water that came from the ice. This speaks to the second reason. Reason B is change. So if the change is not as noticeable, it's not as big of a deal. So I'm just here to tell you that plenty of folks don't worry about this custom at all. I remember it intrigued me as a young teen learning these things, and I was in YU for Shabbos, and I asked one of the rabbis there, "Do you have to worry about this?" And he told me no, and I've seen that many times, since that. There's always customs on everything that'll be different than yours. Don't let that, it's good to ask maybe if you're not sure, but don't let that scare you. There's no problem at all putting ice into a bowl, into an ice pitcher or whatever. If it melts, it melts. That's not, and even using that water afterwards, not a problem. Okay. Filling an ice tray with water to make ice, and then even more interesting is automatic ice machines, ice makers. So filling an ice tray with water to make ice, there are definitely poskim who say one should not make ice on Shabbos because it's a form of nolad, it's a form of making something new. It was a liquid, now it's a solid, they just function very differently. So there are people who will avoid that on Shabbos. At the same time, a vast majority of the poskim, I would say, agree that if you need it and you want it, you can do it. So, it went willy-nilly, you got five ice trays and you only need one. There are other issues also, preparing for afterwards. But certainly if you, Shabbos morning, you realize you've got no ice, it's 95 degrees, everyone's going to want a cold drink, you're certainly allowed to make the ice for, that you may use. There's no, again talking a little bit of this, of the not preparing for after Shabbos. Not preparing doesn't mean you got to measure, let's say I'm having 15 people and how many ice cubes, you don't have to do that. Right? There's no requirement to get it down to, that's not required. If someone may benefit from this on Shabbos, that's not preparing for afterwards. If you end up with a couple trays Saturday night, it's fine. That's a non-issue. So filling ice tray with water to make ice, if you need it for Shabbos, is totally fine. The more exciting question is, can you use an automatic ice maker? And I suspect most of us would say, no way, no day, how can you possibly do that? No way, Jose. Okay.
But
so,
you don't cause it. It just does its thing.
Okay, very good. So, this is one of the many conversations I had with Rabbi Kushkerman, who in general is very lenient about a lot of these things, and based on Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, actually, who says it's not a problem, exactly as you're saying, as long as, the only caveat is, meaning leaving it on before Shabbos is actually fine, as long as you're not doing anything on Shabbos that will directly impact the functioning of that ice maker. Which means, if the arm in the ice machine is up because of the mountain of ice, and now you come along and you scoop out that mountain which causes the arm to come down and start making ice again, that's prohibited. But if it's functioning, you can definitely take it out. If it stopped and you can get ice, you know, somewhere else, which may eventually lead it to collapse, you know, you're not directly impacting the functioning of that machine, no problem. It's not considered a psychratio, a concept we discussed earlier. It's not considered, you want A, which is get ice. And if A, getting ice, will directly lead to B, the machine start working again, that's prohibited. That's the same as opening your refrigerator and the light going on. But if act A is not going to directly cause the machine to start functioning, no problem. Which I think most people will open like their jaws drop. And say,
no, I always like bags of ice, or we lift it. But if the arm is down, which is the way it is while it's making the ice,
right?
It will. I mean, if you remove ice,
it'll
make more.
Correct.
So it will go up and come back down by itself.
Oh, very good. Excellent point.
More.
I wasn't going to touch on that. So there is an important concept which we'll discuss a whole bunch, you know, next year sometime, hopefully in Yerushalayim, and that is the idea of continuing the status quo. It's very relevant to electricity and timers and stuff. So continuing the status quo, generally speaking, is fine. If you're doing something that allows the status quo to continue longer, that's perfectly fine. So, gosh, what's a good example? Because all of these are affected by amachlokas. I'm trying to think of one that's not. I think we touched on this before. I don't want to confuse anyone. If it is confusing, you know, just ignore this.
Okay.
But if you've got a thermostat, not electric thermostat. It's not. There's no batteries. There's no nothing. I think I mentioned they're next to impossible to find these days. If you've got one of those, you can actually adjust the heat or adjust the air conditioning on Shabbos as long as all you're doing is allowing the status quo to continue longer. Which means, if the heat is running and your thermostat is set to 65 and you're freezing and you want to make it warmer in the house and the heat's running. Right now the heat is blowing hot. You're allowed on a mechanical only thermostat to dial it so that it goes to 68 or 70. That's actually perfectly fine. What are you doing? You're allowing the heat to stay on longer. I'm not talking about if it's a complicated system and it's going to shift into high and none of that stuff. If it's just a simple old-fashioned system, it's either on or it's off. And again, the thermostat is the old-fashioned dumb thermostat, which I wish we could get again. You just, you know, you dial it from 65 to 68, it'll stay on 20 minutes longer than it would have otherwise. That's fine, because you're continuing the status quo from before. That's one example that I think everyone agrees with, that's perfectly fine. So again, just before I answer your question, in this case, certainly if the ice maker is making ice, and you're removing ice, all that does is allow the machine to stay on longer through the night, so, you know, to make up for that, that's fine. We don't view that as impacting the machine. If it's off now, and by yanking out that ice, you're going to turn it on, that's a problem. That's prohibited. Yes, ma'am.
Potter must have you need to push buttons.
Yes, totally without. Anything that's electric that you push buttons on cannot be touched on Shabbos ever.
Oh, so you can't then?
Cannot. Yeah, I'm just talking about the old fashioned, the old guys.
Like
either a dial or the guys on top, but you don't, no battery. You never get low battery light flashing in your face.
But if it's off, you have to tell that the opposite. I mean, if it's like if your air
and
is not
off,
running, you do the opposite
correct.
Of what you would think.
If it's too hot in the house and it's off, you can make it stay off longer.
Excuse me.
That's for sure fine.
So if you have one of those like little space heaters that have the dial, and if the space heater is running,
I don't know how those work, but assuming that dial is strictly mechanical,
right.
Then it'd be the same concept, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same concept.
But
yeah.
I'm still confused about the ice maker, so I'm doing just what I always do.
We turn ours off
and that's
I'm not
I
just
doing
make
there's
sure
nothing wrong with
enough
that.
Ice.
Right.
We just make sure there's enough ice in there and
right.
it gets
that's
turned
exactly
on.
Exactly what we do.
Yeah. You can certainly do that. It avoids any questions at all.
Right.
And there are posts who say you have to do that. There are definitely posts who say,
we're with that group,
yeah. Don't want
to
make it.
Some of these leniencies, you go, you know, some communities, you know, go to B'nai B'rak and tell them that you can do this, they will think you have two heads. but certainly there are many posts, you know, who allow that. And again, that's the beauty, I think, of the halachic system. You can have two very different approaches to the exact same issue, and they're both acceptable. They're both halachically based, and they're both, you know, as long as they come from Torah and from poskim, big enough people who understand the issues clearly, they're both acceptable approaches. Kind of fascinating. Okay. The last point on this page is making jello-like desserts. There are certainly opinions who say one should not do that on Shabbos because you're taking a solid, you're taking a powder, mixing it with water, and making a solid.
And you're also making something new.
Right. So they would say, in that sense, I mean, the issue always with Nolad is, and I don't pretend to have a clear grasp of exactly, Nolad itself is not a very simple topic, and there's just a lot of discussion about it, but what exactly is considered a new, meaning putting chocolate in milk is not considered Nolad, you're not making it just because we buy it separately, one's milk and one's chocolate milk, and they're different items in the store, does not make it Nolad. And there's 1,000 examples like that. So we don't apply, you know, we have to be careful when we apply this concept of nolad. We don't want to throw it around too loosely and say, you know, everything's prohibited because. No. But this would be an example where some postman would say, yes, this is nolad and should not be done on Shabbos.
So you're saying, though, that you can add liquid chocolate syrup to liquid milk and mix it to make chocolate milk?
Yes.
Okay.
No problem at all. That's not considered a new entity. Ketchup on French fries. I mean, all that kind of stuff is totally.
So whipped cream in the can, you cannot use.
Whipped cream in the can. I have seen discussion about that, but the bottom line is, I think almost everyone uses it. That type of thing.
Okay.
You're adding air. You're making it, but generally, it's not. I can think of some postings that would forbid it, but generally, we don't avoid that at all. Okay. Other questions, ladies, before we.
Good night. You said some say no for this jello-like dessert. Do others say yes?
That's a good question.
Or just the way that you said it sounds like some say yes, but others
well,
say no.
Would you ever make jello?
I prefaced that. I mean, yes, you did.
No.
You did pick up on that. And the reason I said that is because, you know, one of the themes I suspect you're picking up on is that things which have been around for a long time, things which Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, clearly have an approach and clearly have an understanding of what to do and what not to do. It's much easier to say, even there's arguments, but it's much easier to say this is a halacha. Whereas, and I'm not saying it never had such a substance before, but certainly jello, the way we have it today, is probably a much more modern creation, invention. It's harder to say definitively this is a halacha because it's just very hard to do that. So that's why I kind of prefaced it by saying there are poskim who say.
I rarely have a burning need for jello.
But one of those things that just grabs you, right? Yes, ma'am.
Really good.
You know that frozen whip that you leave it in the fridge and it defrosts in the fridge, right? And you put it in a bowl and you whip it and it becomes stiff.
Rich whip.
Right.
Is that permitted on Shabbos?
I've never seen anyone say that's a problem.
But it takes a mix master to whip it.
Yeah. Well, you can do it with your arm.
Oh, you can?
You can use a whip.
Like eggs?
I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, you'd be doing it for a long time.
Right.
But it's much easier with a mixer.
I wouldn't need it that badly.
No, I make it. I mean, usually I make it Friday before Shabbos.
Right.
We're going to have a dessert. Friday night that we're going to use it, and then it's gone.
It's not fun.
Okay, so in answering the question about Jell-O, I do see him also being very non-committed. Yes. Let me just see if this footnote's in the back. Yeah, he even starts off by saying, "Yishli hispapek." There is, so you know, you can wonder whether or not this is a problem or not, and he gives the reasons why it's a problem. And again, he uses the word ulai, you know, maybe it's a problem. And he quotes a couple of rabbis.
Is it the 39 Malachi problem?
Yes. Yeah. I should ask Rabbi Kushkman, but I bet you he'd say, don't worry about it.
I think you should ask, not that we would do it, but I think it just seems like... You are making, I mean, you're creating a totally different
new thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's different.
Right. Which is, if you're thinking about it.
Right.
We talked about eating is different, though.
Well, the act of eating is never prohibited. The question is preparing things, which clearly there's a long list. I mean, the whole first 11 malachos are really preparing food. So clearly, preparing stuff is, you know, can be prohibited.
I'm going to have to get somebody's notes from the 2 weeks I missed.
Okay, any final questions, ladies, before we close? No problem. Enjoy.
Your children will be very
happy. Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.